Blog Talk Radio. This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening. Good morning and welcome to our first podcast of the year, 2022. Today we have on the line Reggie Nicholson. Hi, Reggie.
Hello, Alpha.
And how are you today in New York?
Oh, I'm doing great. You know, another beautiful day. It's overcast, but it's great. Great energy.
Good. I'm just really looking forward to, you know, our creative conversation today. We're going to explore for 2022 tactical urbanism in the horizontal landscape. And it says Reggie Nicholson's concepts. Can you talk a little bit about yourself? And then what are concepts?
Okay. Well, I was born and raised in Chicago. Native Chicagoan, and I'm just a product of the Chicago Public School music programs, I'm proud to say. So music has been part of my life as far as I can remember. And, you know, I mean, in terms of my concepts, you know, most of my concepts were influenced by all my influences and motivations of all the music I've heard throughout my life. So it's a combination of, you know, all those experiences growing up and experiences of New York, basically. So that's it in a nutshell, basically, yeah.
So in a nutshell, let's talk about that nutshell. So you're saying that you were born here in Chicago and, you know, and then you relocated to New York, and how long have you been away from the Windy City?
Well, see, after I graduated from Chicago State University, I was introduced to the AACM back in, during that period. I guess I became a member in 79. And so I started getting more involved with you know, the music scene of the AACM, and then I started traveling, and then my first time in New York City was in 1984. And then I moved officially in 87, so I've been back and forth, but mainly based in New York since 1987. Wow, it's been a while now, yeah.
And that's almost like half your lifetime, right?
Yeah, you can say that, yeah, because prior to that I was you know, like I said, I was a product of the public schools. I was in school band, fifth grade school band. That was the beginning of my so-called professional career. And through high school and, you know, scholarship recipient at Chicago State University as a percussion major. And, you know, became a member of the AACM, and then everything just took off from there. So, yeah, it's been quite a journey. And I would never say I didn't enjoy every moment, and I have been. I've been blessed. Hello?
Hello? Can you talk more about your time in Europe?
In Europe? Well, I've never lived in Europe. I've traveled Europe, you know, through my experiences here in New York, working with several people who were touring Europe, but I've never really stayed in Europe in that sense. But I toured quite often. My first tour was with Amina Claudine Myers, who's also a member of the AACM, and then I toured with Henry Gregill's Sextet, toured with Muhar Richard Abrams' band over in New York, Myra Melford's band, quite a few groups. I've toured quite extensively in New York. So it was more like tours than, you know, spending extensive time in Europe. You know, most of my base, like I said, I was based there in New York. So I was touring Europe a lot, say maybe the 90s and the 2000s. Well, I'm still doing it, you know, every now and then, but not as extensive as before. So that was my whole experience of touring in Europe with those specific groups. Basically, that's it, yeah. But as far as my career and concepts, you know, everything was influenced by those experiences of touring, and especially here in New York, you know, seeing Max Roach's M. Boone percussion ensemble for the first time back in the early 80s, that kind of blew my mind. Even though I was influenced by, you know, percussion music at Chicago State because I was a percussion major and was able to be able to experience the whole concept of percussion instruments as an ensemble. And so that was the beginning of my whole percussive approach. And also that was the beginning of me composing music, was at Chicago State, composing a few pieces for my senior recital, in addition to doing some traditional marimba stuff. I think I did a Dante Cantabile piece, you know, simple version of Bach's piece on my piano for my recital. But I composed a couple of pieces for the senior recital, so that was the beginning of me composing music. And throughout my time with the AACM, naturally the influences and the motivation to create your own music, you know, and express yourself freely without any restrictions or particular style, I just fit right into that. And then, you know, it's kind of like developed to what I'm doing today, basically. But the whole touring and working was, you know, based on all that, yeah.
So how was the touring, how is that, how it influenced you as your growth as a musician and growth as an African-American traveling overseas? What was that like for you?
Well, let's see. Well, in the beginning, it was new for me because, you know, being in, you know, growing up in segregated Chicago on the South Side, you know, it was like a whole different cultural shock for me to be able to go to Germany and see how the Germans live, go to Italy to see how the Italians live, drink the good beer in Germany, eat the good food in Italy. So it influenced me quite a bit. But also, as far as my composing and writing, you know, listening to some of the sounds, especially in Austria, the church bells, German church bells, kind of influenced my piece, Time Brings on Many Changes. On my first recording, I simulated, you know, the clocks and the gongs and the bells of the clocks. So that was the first influence of my composing, was touring in Austria and Germany and trying to simulate the giant clocks and the bells and the sounds that I would hear while I was there. And as far as, you know, being African-American in Europe, I mean, they, you know, you get more of a positive response because you're black and from America. In Europe, I felt, so it was no, I didn't feel any racism or any kind of like negative vibes while I was touring. You know, they were more appreciative, and I guess, you know, it was into what you were doing, and it was cool. I didn't feel any tension at all. You know, I guess it was an advantage to be an African American from the States at that time, you know, doing all the jazz festivals and everything. But things changed a little bit, but it's still a little bit more receptive than the United States as far as, you know, jazz musicians and composers or being able to play music that's non-traditional and be accepted. And that's,
so
Europe
talk about
was, you know,
that.
Very
let's...
open that way.
Great. Mm-hmm. A lot of musicians and artists, they leave the States, you know, and go overseas, and some just don't come back, you know, because of that very, you know, and this is 2022, that whole vibe of, you know, of course, of the racism and the black experience. So let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned non-traditional. You know, that's a phrase you threw out, but could you describe what non-traditional means?
Well, when I say non-traditional, it's like for jazz, you know, usually traditional jazz is like bebop, you know, or swing music, you know, so that's traditional in that sense. So when I say non-traditional, I mean try not to use those elements of the tradition of jazz and just, you know, just fresh new ideas that's, you know, part of the jazz tradition. But it's not traditional. And that's what I mean by non-traditional, just not doing the standard way of playing changes, going, you know, the blues changes, you know, or, you know, trying to emulate the swing era, you know, just trying to capture or regurgitate, I like to say, the tradition of jazz and so forth, or pop music, whatever, but non-traditional is like you're breaking away from those traditions and creating something new or similar, but not in a traditional way. You know what I'm saying? It's a little bit more creative and it's more open and freedom in the non-traditional way of composing. So that's how I approach my writing. It's, you know, it's non-traditional, but it has a flavor of being traditional, but trying to expand on the idea. So it's not really traditional, and it becomes non-traditional in my sense. So that's what I mean by non-traditional. Is it clear? Basically? Hello?
Okay.
I guess we're going in and out, right?
Oh, yeah, that is a thing that's happening with technology. So thank you for hanging in there and waiting for me to dial back in. So we're going to continue the conversation and go into what it is that you're doing now, like I guess what you're doing now, but how it's reflective of your trajectory. And we're at a place where you're doing the Europe tour. Now you're back in New York, and I understand that your background is music education. So let's talk about that part of your life.
You're currently
working at the Harlem School of the Arts, am I correct?
Yes, I'm part-time doing, private drum students there, for the past several years, and I also was teaching full time for the past 18, 20 years of high school music. So in between all the action of touring and gigging, I was also, educator in high school music program. Even when I was still in Chicago, I was, also teaching through the different Chicago programs at the time. When I was really doing it, it was through the Chicago Council of Fine Arts. I don't know if it still exists. And, so I was doing basic, drum teaching and being part of the school system that way. But I didn't really get into teaching until I, moved to New York and had to supplement some of the downtime. So I became the substitute teacher. One thing led to another. And right now I'm retired from teaching, so that's giving me the time and the space, the energy to really pursue my music and my concepts and to try to, get more involved as a leader. The educational part was brief, but I guess 18 years, 20 years is not brief, but it's set
right
up to where I am right now. It went by fast. I enjoyed every moment, being able to see the faces of the students when they get the scale right, or the percussion section, hit the right note, hit the right time, But it was all cool for me, and, I had to, make the move at that moment. And, I don't regret it. It was a great experience for me, and I'm sure it was a great experience for the students who have me as a teacher, because I was never traditional in a sense, but also had to follow the rules of being observed and following the whole curriculum of the system at the time. But I had, you know, what they call it, I had the flexibility to teach the way I felt was more productive to the students without trying to be so rigid. And so I enjoyed every moment because I had that creativity to expand the ideas of what I'm teaching and do it in a, you know, non-traditional, stiff way. Not to say that most teachers do it that way, but I'm just saying my way, I had to do it my way to feel comfortable and then get through the years of teaching high school music here in New York.
So let's expand that idea of music education and then how, as artists, we influence our youth and influence. How much was it an influence on your own practice? And how did that cross over, you know, with you being a professional, world-renowned musician and teaching in the education system? How did that, not affect your career, but affect and influence the way the students saw you?
Well, you know, they just saw an African-American man who was, dedicated and serious about music. You know, because, you know, there's this whole thing about music being an extracurricular activity, but they saw and sensed from me the seriousness of this discipline. And for me, it organized my thoughts, my routine as a musician and composer to, you know, use that that seriousness, the focus, the organizational skills, you know, the timing of making sure everything is right, you know, in terms of the lesson plans or making sure the composition has its, you know, introduction, middle, and ending, you know. So it all influenced me in a way to, you know, make sure that I stayed focused. And as far as the students, they saw how serious I was about it. So they respected my opinion. They respected my lessons. And I tried to relate the lessons to my experience. Now, I didn't talk about my, you know, outside experience too much because I was trying to keep things, you know, level. Cause too much can create problems in the educational sense as far as a freelance musician, but that's another story. But the students saw the seriousness of my approach to teaching them, you know, the different subjects and the different theories of music. And they enjoyed it. I see students now, I still say, man, I really enjoyed the class. Or they remember me, you know, there's the music teacher, Mr. Nicholson. You know, so it's a give and take thing of fashion of knowing that the students got appreciated me and understood how I was serious and really tried to make the students understand but also enjoy the seriousness of music, because, you know, it's a whole different thing with the attitude towards music, you know, in terms of hip-hop and rap, but they can see the other side of everything in relationship to what they like. That was the approach that I took.
So you have any, not that everything's success or everything is a success when you're working with students, but do you have any success stories of any of your students venturing into their own, like, bands and, you know, following music as a career option?
I mean, some of the senior members, before they graduated, they all formed bands. And I had a connection with the local college here where we were able to use their studios. And so I would take the seniors to the studio to record their songs, you know, so they can experience the whole studio experience and have their own bands. But outside of that, once they graduated, I didn't keep in touch. Or, you know, it was, you know, I'm sure quite a few of them are still doing their thing, but I'm not sure if they have. But I know the students that I took to the studio, and I'm sure they're probably still doing stuff. You know,
that's a great experience. I think that's a really great experience to be able to actually go to a recording studio. I know that a lot of colleagues and, you know, other music teachers have formed bands where they travel a lot and perform, and those are really great experiences. So now that you're retired and education is behind you, and you've been, you know, invested, you know, 20 years plus into education, I understand that you are looking at your world as a composer, and you're looking at being a tour, setting up your own tours.
Well, yeah, I've been always been trying to do that in between teaching, but you know, to have a consistent tour was difficult to plan because of my obligations to the 5-day-a-week routine. But yes, now I have the time to kind of pursue that. I'm trying to organize a small tour now. You know, it's like everything is always in progress, you know, so I'm always looking for opportunities to express myself musically and to try to get my concepts performed, you know. You know, I've done gigs with my percussion ensemble here in New York, done gigs with my brass ensemble here, and, you know, we've gone to maybe Philly or, you know, close states nearby, but it was never a tour, you know, like one gig or something. But now that's my focus, is to try to be doing a small tour just to do it, you know. So I'm in the progress of trying to, or process of trying to do that now, because I have the time. And, you know, I'm looking forward to our collaboration, you know, as a soloist on your project. So that's, you know, part of the old plan of trying to keep my concepts moving forward.
Well, you brought up our project, so I will announce it. The Phantom Gallery Chicago is proud to announce the collaboration with composer and musician Reggie Nicholson as a resident artist for the 2022 program year. He will be working directly with lead artist and chief curator Alpha Bouton. In addition, the Phantom Gallery will provide technical and administrative support to create new work and explore new ideas with a 2-month sound and video exhibition at the end of the project. And so we're really glad to have you on board as you transition here to Chicago. And our project, again, is called Tactical Urbanism in the Horizontal Landscape. And what does that mean? Because your part of the programming will be soundscape tapestries. You know, you want to talk to us about what that might look like?
Well, I have several ideas floating around in my head, but to get the soundscapes of, you know, naturally the percussion instruments, because, you know, it's going to be based off my solo recording that I have out on metal, but also, you know, taping some sounds and integrating the soundscapes of what I will be recording to mix in with the acoustic or live performance of my percussive ideas in relationship to what you're doing. So it's in progress, but I do have a plan of how I will approach these soundscapes without saying exactly what I'm going to do, because, you know, as you get into the process, it always metamorphoses into something else. But that's the general plan of trying to capture some sounds and integrate it into what I'm going to do.
So a little bit about tactical urbanism and the way the Phantom Gallery produces this series is they are, it's about contributing to the horizontal landscape to expose pedestrians and tourists to experience of what is viewed inside the gallery. And what we will create is a dynamic platform for large-scale installation and moving image works and sound performance, which did not have a dedicated space at the Brownsville Art District Trolley Tours in the prior years. And some of our other residencies have created this space where instead of being inside the gallery, we work outside and work with projections We don't have a screen. We use buildings. We use the landscape, you know, to produce these pop-up experiences for pedestrians that would not normally come into the gallery environment. And so it's been, we've been doing this here in Bronzeville since 2014, and I've had other resident artists. You know, our last resident artist was Renee Baker, and before that we had Collective Voices and another student from Janelle McDowell from Columbia University, and others have come out to do these projections. And so what we're looking at this year is, you know, after everything's experimental and we don't know what we're going to do because we're still investigating this. We're still talking through this and going through the process of how we're going to present this project. And again, it starts now, and it starts in April, and it goes through July and then here in Chicago. So we're looking forward to this residency and working with you and fusing our two disciplines and this collaborative project.
Yes. Yeah, so am I. I don't know, like I said, maybe I was maybe a little bit too quick to mention it, but I mean, it was part of my plan of, you know, trying to, you know, do more of my projects, and I was really happy that we were able to, you know, organize this particular section of my plans.
Yeah, so it's interesting about this whole thing when you say soundscape tapestries. You know, so what we're looking at is utilizing sound and visual art in a public installation. And people say, okay, what does that mean? And so I think that initially when we started talking about this residency of soundscape tapestries, we talked about that it will echo African-American music experience unique to the sounds of Chicago, you know. And we'll be doing some more experimental film projections. And we don't know, you know, because I don't know what we're going to do. It's all experimental.
The excitement of it all, you know.
Right. And in terms of the tapestry and you as a composer, you know, it's always interesting that how we think and how abstract we think when we're working, but we have to really be concrete, you know, in our processes. So what is that like being a composer, you know, and what's going on with that? Because a lot of musicians, you know, you're classically trained. You have your master's in theory, and you can do these things. And a lot of musicians that are doing free music, they are maybe self-taught and they play by ear. They're not really reading music, but you can just. Well, what is that like? How is that working between the two schools?
Well, you know, like from experience since, you know, fifth grade band all the way through college, you know, I was able to understand how to read and understand the written side of music, interpreting rhythmic notation, things like that. But as far as a composer, you know, you draw on those things, and because you have that educational side, I should have to say musical literacy, I used to call it, of understanding how to read and compose, it helps as a foundation for you to use for your creations. And as far as a composer, you know, the ideas of what to compose, and for me, it's like I try to capture the feeling of the moment or the feeling of the atmosphere or the feeling of the thought through music, right? And so the whole foundation of reading and not reading, really, it matters, but it really doesn't matter, you know, in a sense, for a composer. But you have to write it down if you want other musicians to interpret what you're doing. So that's where it comes in at, or have some kind of guidance for the other musicians to use in order to express what you want to say. You know, sometimes it comes out, sometimes it doesn't, but it's always the freedom as a composer to try to interpret your thoughts the way you feel and where you think how it sounds and feels at that moment. So most of my music is based on that, you know, the moments that I try to capture, the feeling of the vibe of my thoughts. And, you know, most of the time in improvisation, you can, like, just vibe on the atmosphere or the feeling of what's going on now and interpret that through the music without even writing it down. You know, you got some musicians who could do that instantly, where you say, okay, give me this, you know, spaceful dark sound, and that's it. And it goes from there. But as a composer, you know, you can, like, focus on many aspects of expression, written or non-written. So it depends on how you approach what you want to say.
Amazing, you know, and I think that as, you know, going to a lot of the concerts and being around musicians, I feel it's just totally, you know, amazing how that spirit transcends, you know, when you're playing and when you're creating sound and when in these performances, you know, and I think that that's the difference between people getting these standing ovations and when this whole soul of you is being transcended, you know, in the room. And it's always, for me, a beautiful thing when musicians can, and a spiritual thing, when musicians can do that with their audience, as visual artists can do that with the people that are looking and you know, experiencing their works. So
right, feeling it, yeah.
So I want to talk about metal, your piece that you composed in 2018, and it's a solo recording for percussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my second solo. Actually, my first one was percussion with electronics that I composed. But metal was my attempt to just do total acoustic percussion solo. And, you know, I basically just emptied my room to do this recording in terms of the instruments that I have. But I approached each track or composition based on, you know, the elements of percussion instruments: metal, wood, skin, basically. And so that whole concept is being featured in that particular solo. And as far as this title track, you know, metal, I kind of played around with the words a little bit because I was using only metal and percussion instruments for that track, M-E-T-A-L instruments, right? But also metal, M-E-T-T-L-E, has a spiritual meaning in terms of the vibe that you project, positive vibe that you project. And so I was capturing that type of feeling with the word metal and using the spiritual word metal, you know, with a different spelling you can see on the recording. But that was the concept of that particular piece, but also the whole concept of the album was to, you know, use those elements with my instruments and compose little pieces on that. Sometimes you have combined metal, skin, and wood. Some pieces just have only wood. Some pieces you have only metal. So it was the whole concept of, you know, featuring the elements of percussion instruments on that album. And that was a whole other story, but yeah, sorry.
Well, what about the album cover? Because that is one of the album covers and one of the pieces that I feature in your blog article on Phantom Gallery Blogspot. And
right,
if anyone wants to listen to your music, they can go to your website. And your website is?
It's ReggieNicholson.com.
Right, to hear more of his music. And there's excerpts of his work, you know, can be found there.
But talk to us a little bit about your cover. Why did you select that image for the cover of Metal?
Well, it was funny. I was just in town at the time in Chicago, and I was I took the bridge over, the 47th Street Bridge over to the lake, and I noticed the sculpture that was there, this giant sculpture that was looking up in the sky. I said, man, what is it? So I walked over there, and it was a brilliant sculpture, like 33-foot sculpture looking up at the sky. So I was so amazed with this that I took a picture, you know, from my phone, you know, and I didn't, you know, it was part of my photographs. And then a few years later, I was looking for, you know, image for my, you know, recording that I just did in 2018 for the recording. And I looked and I saw this particular photo. I said, man, this is perfect because, you know, it's looking up in the sky, the whole M-E-T-T-L-E spirit of looking up and spiritual positive vibes. So I said, man, this is it. But, you know, it took me a while to find the sculptorist who did this piece because I didn't want to just put it out there without his permission, you know. But that was how I selected that piece, you know. And then the artist's name? Tom Friedman, I think was his name. Friedman, yeah. He's the sculptorist that created that piece. And I contacted him, and he said, great, he'll be honored that I could use it on my album cover. And that's how I became, you know, it was just a chance of looking through my photos that I said, this is it. So it was, it just happened that way, basically. But I was happy that Tom gave me the permission to use it so graciously. And that's why I used the cover for that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's really good that each artist respects each artist's
yes.
art form and, you know, and copyright infringements and all of the,
right.
rest, you know, of the things that we need to do in our due diligence,
mm-hmm.
You know, and not just randomly use the work out there. And so that's a really good message and a takeaway for today's show. Let's talk about unanticipated
right.
impacts and how does the current body of work intersect with the ideas of art and, I don't know, social justice and our tactical urbanism? Or does it?
Mm. Oh, yeah, it's all related, you know, in a sense, but it depends on how the music and the art is being used to express that. That's a difficult one to try to
Well, I mean, in terms of the way the world has happened, and the world has rotated in the last, you know, 2 years, we've been through a major,
yeah.
and we're on the other side of a pandemic, and what that looks like. You ride New York trains. You know, you've been through the civil rights movement, or you came in at the end of it, and. You know, like the 60s here in Chicago, and how are those things are influencing, and those are things that I feel are that they're things that are social unrest, and how do artists, and you know, respond to those?
Right. Well,
things.
Yeah, I see. But I kind of did that on my latest recording, my latest percussion recording. No Preservatives Added, a couple of tracks on there that I was influenced by all that was happening recently, the whole uprising, you know, like Say It Ain't So was the vibe I felt when, you know, once again, there's a murdered black man by the hands of the police, you know, and, you know, and then George Floyd influenced me on that one, and then the whole pandemic thing, Time to Reset, the other track that I felt like, you know, okay, things stop, so it's time to reset and deal with the so-called new normal in that sense, you know. And another track I did, Remote Distant, was like this whole vibe of like humanity being disconnected now and Zooming and, you know, staying away from each other. So, you know, events, and especially the current events, did influence my my titles as well as the expression musically. And as far as, you know, everything else, you know, I mean, most of my music is dealing with my life and, you know, my experiences. So, you know, it's all related in terms of the visual and the audio part of trying to express the current events of the moments. But, yeah, you know, you can't avoid not being influenced by some of the current events, you know, if you're really sensitive and try to be part of it. But, you know, that was my way of expressing myself in terms of the current events, those three pieces on my latest recording.
How can artists impact their environment and contribute to the overall vitality of a city?
Oh, man. Ooh. Well, you know, Chicago, you know, New York, you know, all the so-called meccas of music, you know, it definitely makes a difference. I mean, Chicago has got another impact because it's a lot of visual artists, a lot of musicians who are there. And even though it's like so-called a second city of New York, there's a great impact of the spirit of music in Chicago. And as far as New York, you know, everybody's here. It's like an international vibe, and it's the impact of everybody being here from other places. I mean, Chicago's got that too, but not as intensively as New York. And so, you know, the reputation of New York especially, of, you know, high-quality musicians who come here to try to, you know, blend in and capture their dreams, you know, it makes a difference, you know, to... You know, for the reputation and the seriousness of each city, so the musicians and the artists, they do make a strong impact of the energy and the reputation of the scene in each city or anywhere. So yeah, the musicians and artists does make the city what it is. It does have a strong impact, in my opinion.
So Richard, we have like. Yeah, but it's just something to really think about in terms of what we do as artists and how it impacts our own art. You know, recently you took a trip to Paris, and this is during the time where we hadn't ended, well, we're still in the pandemic as far as I'm concerned, but in terms of traveling, you went to Canada, then you had a trip to Paris, and what was that like for you? And we only have a couple of minutes to talk about the world opening back up and what that means for musicians and how you navigate that.
Well, it was kind of traumatic for me because, you know, there's all these extra layers of, I wouldn't say resistance, but, you know, it's like before it was, you know, traveling was getting more difficult and all the security and all the, you know, you can't take this on the plane, all that. But now you had the extra protocols of being tested, filling out forms, you know, being tested again, you know, make sure you had your, you know, all the shots and all that stuff. So it for me, once I get past all that, I just let it go. But it was very difficult to get through all that stuff because before I didn't have to deal with naturally. Because it was no pandemic,
and now we're
but,
on the other side of that, and I really look forward to, again, programming with you being here at the Phantom Gallery Chicago, and doing a collaborative piece. And we're going to hear more from you in the future, and we'll do more creative conversations as our residency goes forward. But again, I want to thank you for joining me this morning on Creative Conversation. And I really look forward to having Reggie Nicholson join us for Tactical Urbanism in the Horizontal Landscape and our project Soundscape Tapestry.
Yes, thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed every second, and I'm looking forward to a collaboration as well.
This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations Relations produce Creative Conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening.